everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks, engineering and producing the show. And together, we welcome you to the program, Midweek Edition and Middle of the Year. It's Wednesday, July the 1st, 2020. Oh, Canada Day, the shining star of the Great North. Congratulations to our Canadian friends who really did get it together in handling COVID-19. They really handled this in a very responsible way, unlike some other areas here in the good old USA. Anyway, it's Buckmaster bringing Southern Arizonans together on the radio in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio. We are on 1030. It's Tucson's voice for trusted news talk. Anywhere in the world, live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com. Program note, Will Hummel, who's been all over the place on national media, the former state health director, will be my guest for an hour on Friday. Tim Stellar, the star, will be joining me for that interview. Anyway, let's get right now to the new spending plan for the next 12 months, passed by the mayor and the Tucson City Council. The budget earmarks $71 million for disaster relief money. Despite some calls to defund the police department, the council did designate $166 million to TPD, which accounts for about a third of the general fund. It also is a roughly $2 million increase from last year's allocation, and the city previously committed to hiring 20 new police officers and 10 community service officers. Ward 6, Tucson City Councilman, Democrat Steve Kasachek, joins us for his monthly visit to my program. How are you, Steve?
Doing pretty well. How are you doing, Bill?
I'm trying to hang in there like everybody else, trying to stay as positive as possible. These new numbers from COVID today, record numbers in Arizona. It's just really hard to stay positive. If you are looking for some good news, I say kudos to the firefighters who managed under incredible difficult conditions, Steve Kasachek, up on Mount Lemmon to save virtually no structures destroyed. Yeah, a lot of acreage was destroyed, but at one point there were parts of our community really in danger, and they've pretty much got a handle on it. And I see that as a lot of positive news, Steve.
Yeah, they're doing a heck of a job up there and over in the Oro Valley area as well. Now it's heading towards Reddington area. It's all over. And to their credit, I mean, it's not like they're doing this in the middle of October when it's, you know, 80 degrees or 70 degrees up there too. So you add to the fact that they're working in extremely difficult terrain, 100-degree heat with all their turnout gear on, which means that they're really toasting inside their turnout gear, and so hydration for themselves as well as the smoke inhalation is just a huge issue. And they've done a great job in terms of protecting the people's property. It's heartbreaking to see us losing all the saguaro and, you know, the natural vegetation up there, but and the impact on the animals. But yeah, I mean, they're doing a heck of a job, and it's really, really tough work.
Your thoughts on the new spending plan?
Well, I was the lone dissenter last night, but it was probably not for reasons that you would expect. First of all, on the whole defunding the police thing, our police budget is going up for a couple of reasons. Number one, we're obligated by state law to cover their pension costs, the pension increases. Those are going up. They're not going down. And so that's going to be a part of our budget. But more importantly for me is that when I'm at neighborhood meetings and I'm talking to constituents, the primary input that I get as far as the police are concerned, two pieces. Number one is response times. We want you to improve response times. You don't do that by cutting back on the number of officers you have. The second salient piece of input I get from people is that they'd really appreciate how Chief Magnus has come in and changed the culture of the department so that we are now in a community policing mode. And that is, the cops are out in the neighborhoods. They're doing face-to-face meetings, or now it's virtual meetings, that I'm involved with also, where they're meeting with constituents, they're meeting with the people that they're serving, and listening to their concerns. And, you know, we're having burglary in this neighborhood block, or we're having, you know, suspicious activity over here. That community policing takes more, not fewer, officers to do it correctly. And so I am not of a mind to go in and start slashing the police budget. What we are going to do, though, and this is going to be a part of the conversation going forward, is augment the kinds of social support services that we can bring to the table. We already have a mental health support unit. We're going to integrate more housing outreach programs with the police outreach. Obviously, we're already working with social service agencies in the community, such as drug rehabilitation, domestic violence rehabilitation, homeless unit. So we're doing those. We simply have to make sure that they're on site at the right time during a call. But defunding the police, while it sounds it's the mantra these days, and because of incidents that have happened nationally, it's gained some steam. And I'm just sorry that we're in such a, quite frankly, a toxic environment right now, where dialogue and discourse is kind of out the window, and it's now accusation and just name calling, and that's that. I don't have a place for that right now, and because we're trying to balance too many important things. So why did I vote against the budget? Our city manager has advised us that at the start of next fiscal year, that's yesterday, a year from now, June 30th, 2021, we will be facing a $43 million deficit. In order to balance this year's deficit, we are spending down our reserves to about we're going to spend about $60 million in reserves. And we're relying on federal one-time money. At the same time that the city manager is telling our employees, city employees, that we are in a hiring freeze, we're not going to give raises, and oh, by the way, furloughs are not off the table. The mayor and council yesterday approved 9 new employees, 8 social workers, and a new housing first director. I think that's sending the wrong message to our employees. It's spending dollars that the city manager was otherwise going to use to balance this year's deficit. And we ought to be playing by the same rules as the rest of the employees are, we being the mayor and council, and recognizing that we have an obligation to the fiscal solvency of this community before chasing down new employees. They may be great ideas. The question is when, and the timing is not now when we're facing a deficit.
You have stuck by Police Chief Magnus in light of the April 21st death of 27-year-old Ingram Lopez, who died after going into cardiac arrest while handcuffed. One thing I wonder if you could clear up for me, the 3 officers, after this incident did come to light within the department, they were, this case was reviewed and they were put back on the street. What changed now?
So we have, and I said this at yesterday's council meeting, we have some real internal issues that need to be resolved. I think Chief Magnus was poorly served by the processes that we have in place now. The incident occurred, excuse me, on April 21st. An officer, a lieutenant, as I'm told, made the decision that in reviewing the body cam video, it was not significant enough to run up the food chain and let the captains or assistant chiefs or even the chief of police know about. That was a fundamentally poor decision. Based on that person's assessment of the evening, the guys were put back to work. It was another day at the office. You know, it was an unfortunate, in air quotes, it was an unfortunate situation, and these guys went back to work. And so what I have said to the city attorney and during the council meeting was that if our system allows one person to make that call, that is a fundamental flaw in the system. If multiple people made that same decision, then we have a real systemic problem, because we don't have in-custody fatalities all the time. We've had something like 12 in the last 10 years. Mm. As I understand it, 7 of those were suicides. So we're talking about where there is a restraint situation going on, and there's a fatality involved. This happens like once every 2 years. So for that chain of command and whoever was involved in it, we'll find out, to have made the decision that A, that was an insignificant event in terms of running up the food chain, and B, those guys should go back to work, those were fundamentally wrong decisions. As far as those guys going back to work is concerned, in labor law, if you're going to impose what is known as institutional capital punishment, if you're going to take somebody's job away, you better do that quickly. If the incident was so bad that you're firing these people or disciplining them significantly, then you need to do that quickly, not 60 days later. So we got some real internal issues to deal with in terms of the information flow, who knows what, when, and who's reviewing body cam video, when it's made public. We decided yesterday at the council that any in-custody death going forward is going to be made, is going to be revealed immediately to both the mayor and the council and to the community. Now, there is some danger in that, because the preliminary information is what we're going to see. That does not mean a full-blown investigation's going on. People are entitled to their due process. And my concern with us doing that, while I'm all about transparency, but we need to make very sure that people understand the case that you're seeing has not been investigated. And in these days of social media, I'm afraid that people can draw conclusions and it can blow up on social media before we've had a chance to really do the investigation. But given what happened with Lopez, I think we owe it to the public to say you're going to be informed of in custody fatalities immediately while the investigation is going on.
All right, we'll pause right here. Steve Kasacek sticks around with us. We'll do another segment with the councilman. But right now, it's important that you please give a listen to the Buckmaster Show sponsors. These are people sticking with me during some very hard times. I would appreciate you giving a listen and supporting them. Be right back in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
The Arizona mining industry provides precious metals needed to support technical and structural equipment used by law enforcement, firefighters, and the military to keep us safe here and around the world. But the most critical part of public safety and national security is the people who serve without hesitation to protect us. The Southern Arizona Business Coalition stands with our men and women who serve with respect, responsibility, integrity, and discipline daily to keep us safe.
The Regional Transportation Authority and its member jurisdictions have completed more than 850 transportation projects or service improvements across the region to date. The RTA is a state-established political subdivision and taxing district. The RTA's current half-cent sales tax funds the 20-year plan through June 2026. And the RTA is laying the foundation to develop a new plan. To learn more, please visit www.rtanext.com. Vero Amore Restaurant in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowland Swan and Dove Mountain in Marana are now open for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, are ready for you and your friends and family. More at VeroAmorePizza.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster. You've heard me talk about choosing Tucson International Airport. While fewer people are traveling lately, our airport is doing even more these days to help ensure traveler health safety, including counter safety shields, physical distancing markers, enhanced cleaning, and more. It's called TUS Cares, and you can learn more at flytucson.com. These may be different times, but my priority remains to fly Tucson, Tucson International Airport.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. My name is Bill Buckmaster, and we are in the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studio, Ward 6, Tucson City Councilman Steve Kasacek, joining me on the live line. Councilman, do you think the mandatory mask requirements in our more populated areas are going to make a difference?
Well, they better, because our numbers are through the roof. My concern is that the governor waited too long to make significant changes, and I said this as in the last time I was on. This was a month ago, and it took him until 2 days ago to shut down bars. I think that should have been done 30 days ago. That's what I said last time I was on. And I would have also taken the step of going takeout only on the restaurants. That's where you can't wear masks, and that's quite frankly where we're seeing the social distancing. I'm talking about the bars now. Where we're seeing the social distancing violations. In the age demographic that is exploding in terms of numbers the most significantly, and that's 20 to 44. I wrote a guest piece for the Star last week, I guess it was, and it advocated for closing bars and doing takeout only. And some of the coaches that we have in the U of A athletics department immediately wrote me and thanked me for that, saying we're concerned if our student-athletes come back, that's exactly where they're going to head. Reopening the campus, reopening the community generally, is already going to be a tough lift. And for us to allow that kind of activities that we see, I mean, just drive down 4th or Congress or, you know, pass your favorite bar and you'll see people in there shoulder to shoulder. Where I think the governor overstepped is I see a lot of gyms, you know, the small, you know, small mom-and-pop gyms, doing it right. They've got the equipment spread out. They're sanitizing the equipment between workouts. They're staggering the people coming in. You're not seeing people in there breathing all over each other, working out shoulder to shoulder. So I think he should have looked at where the demographic was that we're trying to hit, where the behavioral issues are that we're trying to address, and those are bars and, again, the restaurants where you can't wear a mask while you're eating. And I think that the shutting down the gyms and the movie theaters was an overstep. But yeah, the numbers are through the roof, and masks alone was not going to get it done, in my opinion.
I just wonder how we're going to proceed in this community with the rest of this summer. 1 in 10 of the cases are here in Pima County. That's somewhat good news that it's not as dramatic as Maricopa County. But Steve Kasacek, how in the world are we going to have face-to-face classes at the University of Arizona and athletics in the fall at the U of A?
Everything's Zoom these days, isn't it? It was a conference call. It was a video conference, whatever. Bobby Robbins was addressing that issue less than a week ago. And the question was asked, if the numbers are what they are today, when you have to pull the trigger on making that decision, he says, the question was, what would you do? And he says he would not open campus. Richard Carmona is leading an incident command team that is looking at the data. There is a gentleman named Chris Kopeck who runs the facilities maintenance department for all of campus, who every day has got his people out installing plexiglass and the notifications on doors and floors, you know, the stickers and the social distance stuff, passing out the hand sanitizer and making all the preparations. That's all really good in a vacuum, but once you get the people back on campus and they're in classrooms, I mean, you make it's an excellent question, because now you've got classrooms that are, what, 25% the capacity?
Yes.
Some people being doing their classes online, some in person, the hybrid, some doing both. It is really going to be a lift to see the U of A come back. It's not going to be normal, whatever it looks like. It is a significant financial decision also. And so while health is the primary consideration, losing $250 or $300 million for this institution is a huge consideration as well. So Bobby Robbins, Richard Carmona, the administration is looking at a lot of different moving pieces on this thing. One thing that they cannot predict is what are the infection numbers going to look like 30 days from now when they have to make that call. It's a big decision. The same is true with TUSD and with the school districts. One of the things that the governor just did was push back the start of school to the middle of August now. And so what's that going to look like? And so I've been in touch with Gabe Trujillo from TUSD, and they're doing the exact same thing that the U of A is doing. They're trying to look at all the different contingencies. What does virtual learning for a fourth grader look like compared to a sophomore in college? Completely different kinds of dynamics going on. And it's a lot of big decisions. And this COVID thing, I wrote in my last newsletter, back on March 12th, you and I were probably talking about where the Cats are going to go in the tournament.
Yes, we were.
What a completely different world we're in today, and nobody can predict what it's going to be 30 days from now.
Yeah, and I flash back to that interview that I did with President Robbins, where I believe he was the first major university president to make this announcement that at the time, and that was about 2 months ago, he did not foresee how college football could be played in the fall. And he introduced the idea of a spring season. And that is gaining traction, Steve.
Well, everything is on the table. I mean, that's a cliche, but it has to be. I mean, there's no way that people can just kind of close their minds and say, come hell or high water, we're going to kick off against Hawaii at 7:30 on August, whatever the date is. That's his head in the sand. So I know that Dave Hickey is working with President Robbins. Many, many people on campus are looking at how do you open the campus rec? How do you open the student union? I mean, all these ancillary functions on campus are facing the same uncertainty, and they are also both health issues and financial issues for this institution. And so it's a huge deal. And for financial issues for the institution are financial issues for the city as well, because you've got a lot of businesses up and down Main Gate area, 4th Avenue, that rely on students being there, spending dollars. That's small businesses in this community that the city relies on for sales tax revenue. So the cascading effect of this is widespread and really, really significant.
And getting back to the way we began, and I wonder about your spending plan for 12 months, whether it is realistic enough to consider some of these worst-case scenarios with COVID. Your thoughts quickly.
We have to, and we have committed to going back on a monthly basis. We generally don't do that, but we'd go back on a monthly basis, look at expenditures, look at revenues, and we're going to have to make adjustments on the fly. There's no way around that. This is not business as usual, and there's no way that we can put a budget in place on July 1st today and think it's going to stand for the next 12 months. It's not going to stand for the next 3 months. So we're going to have to really be nimble and stay light on our feet.
And people will continue to work from home, I assume, city employees where they can.
Yes, we're going to advocate, as Governor Ducey said yesterday, and as Bobby Robbins said last week or 2 days ago, the safest place to be is at home. And to the extent that you can telecommute and get your job done, that's what everyone's encouraging.
How about city parks, Steve Kasachek?
They're shut down now until at least August the 3rd. And by they're shut down, I mean the things like ramadas and playgrounds and pools. But still go out to the park, throw your picnic blanket down, distance from the people around you, enjoy being outdoors. That's a, you know, that's a healthy thing to do. Ride your bike, get out for a jog, do all the normal things. But just make sure that if you're in a place where social distancing is a challenge, you got to have a mask on. And that's not a big deal to ask people. And the fact that we're seeing these videos on TV of people, you know, it's my liberty not to wear a mask. It's not your liberty to infect people in the community. And put a damn piece of cloth over your mouth and nose when you're out in public and you can't be more than 6 feet away. That's nothing but a courtesy to the people around you.
All right, Steve Kasachek, I hope you and yours stay well, and we'll weather this, and somehow I know we will get through it. Thank you, Steve.
You bet. Take care of yourself.
Thank you very much, Steve Kasachek, with his monthly visit here on the Buckmaster Show. And Hank Amos is coming up. Hank's on the live line. He'll wait through the break, then we'll go to him on the live line. And it's always interesting to talk to him about how commercial real estate is doing, as well as residential. We'll take our break right here. It's Buckmaster Midweek Edition, Mid-Year Edition, the year that's gone on forever. I'll tell you, be right back.
Here at Bon Voyage Travel, we encourage you to keep the travel spark alive by exploring the world through our weekly webinar series that includes inspiration and insight from some of the top leaders in the travel industry. When you're ready to plan your next adventure, know that Bon Voyage Travel will be here to advise and assist. Join us every Wednesday at 3 p.m. for a new virtual destination discovery. While we're apart, let's keep dreaming together. Visit bvtravel.com for more information.
The Arizona mining industry provides precious metals needed to support technical and structural equipment used by law enforcement, firefighters, and the military to keep us safe here and around the world. But the most critical part of public safety and national security is the people who serve without hesitation to protect us. The Southern Arizona Business Coalition stands with our men and women who serve with respect, responsibility, integrity, and discipline daily to keep us safe.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
Noble Hops in Oro Valley is now open to welcome guests for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Noble Hops menu items are available for you, your family, and friends. So check out Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and on the web at noblehopspub.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is once again welcoming guests to the gallery. Stop by or call ahead for a one-on-one appointment or even a virtual design session. Come by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, located at the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge. The number is 795-8226 and on the web at moesgallery.com.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, to the bump music of one of my favorite groups. Bring it up, Tom. That is the music of America and Tin Man. Going back to my old DJ, I was a DJ briefly in my 52-year career in the media. Did a little DJ work for about 6 months. It was fun. 1972. Spinning the hits. Anyway, we are in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio, and Green Things, 50 years and still growing. I am so proud of Jan and Jack, the owners, what they have done with that 13-acre site. Amazing plants, trees, annuals, more. They've got everything you need to start your own little garden. So many people have done that during the pandemic and the shutdown. A lot of people said, well, why don't I fix up the backyard? Well, Green Things is the go-to place to get all that done. 3384 East River Road. The website is greenthingsaz.com. And of course, there's zocalovillage.com. All that great merchandise. From much of it handmade, there's antiques, fine art, handmade furniture from Latin America and some European items as well. Let's go back now on the live line to George H. Amos III, known by his friends as Hank. Hank Amos, fourth generation Tucsonan. Hank graduated from the U of A in 1981. He's chairman of the board and CEO of Tucson Realty and Trust, incorporated back in 1911. Tucson Realty and Trust is Arizona's oldest real estate company. Their specialty is commercial brokerage and property management. Hey, Hank, how are you? I'm trying to stay positive. How about you?
I'm trying to be positive, too. Thank you for having me on the air. I appreciate it, Bill.
Let's talk a little bit about where we were in March and then when the bottom fell out. Let's talk about this past 6 months. What are some of your thoughts? Kind of give us the big picture as we spend the next half hour talking about where we've been and where we're going, Hank Amos.
Sure. So Tucson was really like recovering from the economic downturn that we had, and really started coming out of it in 18, but 2019 was really a big year. In fact, there was 510,000 square feet that were absorbed in office space in 2019. That was tripled what was happening in 2018, right? So that kind of gives you an indication of how strong our market was, not only commercially, but residentially as well. And so we were really on fire. Things were moving. We were all thinking that 2020 was going to be a record year after coming off a good year in 2019. And as soon as this COVID hit, it was like the brakes just boom, came on and everything went to a stop. There was very little deals and transactions being made. Everything was put on pause. If you were in the commercial real estate business, you either had deals canceled or they were pushed out a little bit. So escrows were either pushed out or due diligence periods were pushed out and all. And same thing kind of in residential. Those agents that were really active and were going to the office, we saw those offices still doing really well. There were some offices that really didn't want to encourage their folks to come to the office. And depending upon you know, which side of the coin you were, your business either increased or you did well or you didn't as much. And then about a month or so ago, maybe 3 weeks, I'd say a month or so ago, as things started opening up, business really started to come back. And we felt like, you know, it's getting back to normal again, kind of. And saw the activity really picking up. Myself was getting very busy on some major transactions and it just felt like, okay, we're back on track again. I don't know what's going to happen now with the recent order from the governor, but it was looking very good again and we were starting to pick up, but it really came to a halt for about you know, 3 months there. And you were just trying to keep deals alive and all. Now, the good thing about residential, especially new home sales, they continue to do well. So, and that's a lot of that has to do with the interest rates right now. They're at near record lows or record lows, and people are taking advantage of that. And so that home builders were really, really busy. And we've had some positive articles that came out, one from Forbes that said Tucson was going to be one of the top cities to recover from COVID. And you're starting to see people from large urban areas that have been really locked up in small spaces kind of saying, you know, I don't want to do this anymore. And the fact that people were forced to work from home or remotely kind of maybe paved the way to say, do I really need to live here? And maybe I can live elsewhere. And so I think Tucson and some of these areas that are outside these more urban areas are having really good home sales and people moving out here. I have an interesting stat where I have a friend of mine who's probably one of the top ranch lot sellers in the state. It's been kind of slow up until this year. And I was talking to him and he says he is on fire. I was like, you're kidding. Because really? I would have thought that, you know, during COVID, it would have come to a complete stop. He says, no, Hank, everybody wants to buy their 20 or 40 acre or 80 acre ranch where they're just going to park their RV and have a place to hang out. He says, I can't keep up. I'm selling everything I have. So it's just kind of interesting how this is all coming apart and all. And I don't know what the future is going to entail. You know, you hear two sides of the coin, like on office. Some people say, well, companies have realized that some of their staff can work from home and maybe I don't need to have all this extra office space, or maybe, there are going to be some cuts made, right? And so you can understand that to a degree. But on the flip side, there's arguments being made where you have individuals are saying, no, office space is going to be just fine. And in fact, now when people have office, they're going to probably get larger office space because they want to have that social distancing because they realize how the flu or illness can affect others. And so their space is going to maybe be a little bit more. I would tend to think if you had to pick between the two, there's probably going to be more vacancy in office. But I really don't know what's going to happen. You have other folks that said, hey, I did this, you know, work from home and did the telecommuting, but they found they missed the interaction and some of the side conversations that happen when you're in the office to make more business and do more things. And they don't want to work from home. They want to be in an office and work there. So I really don't know. We don't really know where it's going to land at the end of the day, but I would say you're probably going to see some increase in vacancy for sure.
Well, you know, getting back to the ranches, that makes sense. People are really saying, you know, if I've got the money, I kind of want to drop out and I want a lot of, space around me. And last week we were up in Brookings, Oregon, where folks, the custom homes on the coast up there are just exploding. People that were normally going to buy in San Diego and other places, more crowded areas, they're looking now for smaller communities, Hank Amos.
That is true. And I have a second home in a town in northern Idaho that's on a lake, and the town's kind of like Mayberry. And that town is on fire. I mean, they're selling everything they have, they're selling. Everything from all the hotel rooms to the VRBOs for renters, everything's full through the whole year. The market's just on fire. And again, it's coming from individuals like from California, especially states that had strict lockdowns.
Yes.
Like Washington and California and New York. They're like, we're done with that. And so people kind of want to get back to a rural lifestyle where, like Mayberry, where it's a little bit easier, not as busy. And so that activity has been super busy in this town. You mentioned it from the town that you visited in Oregon. Tucson's experiencing that. And I think you're going to continue to do it. What was interesting was the family dynamics. COVID obviously was not a great thing from a business perspective. I mean, there's a lot of people that are going to suffer about this, and we'll probably talk about this a little bit later. But it brought families together.
Uh-huh.
And there was one thing that came out of all this was my family and my quality of life is more important. And you're seeing this being played through. And I think that's the reason why people are looking at moving or picking up and doing different things.
All right, Hank, we're going to keep you on hold, and we'll take a break right here, and we'll come back to you after we take our break in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. It's Buckmaster Midweek Edition, Mid-Year Edition. Be right back with Hank Amos, CEO of Tucson Realty and Trust.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The current Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a half-cent sales tax, which expires in June 2026. In preparation for developing a new 20-year plan, the RTA Board established a Citizens Advisory Committee to identify priority projects based on public input. RTA member jurisdictions will submit their respective project lists by June 2020 for the CAC to consider for a future plan. To learn more, visit www.rtanext.com.
Hello, I'm Danette Bewley, President and CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority, with news of our new effort to ensure air traveler safety and security going through our terminal. It's called TUS Cares, and you can read more about it on our website, flytucson.com. As you carefully weigh your decision to fly, I want you to know whether it's next week, next month, or next year, we are here for you at Tucson International Airport. Thank you.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Let's say you need an honest roofer. Where do you start? Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona has more than 3,200 accredited businesses ready to help and committed to doing things right. Next time you need a trusted mechanic, plumber, AC company, or florist, go to our website, bbb.org, or call us at 520-888-6161. Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona. We are here to help you find local companies you can trust.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, this portion in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio, presented by our friends in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. Okay, here's the Buckmaster Show. Silver City guarantee it will be 10 degrees cooler in Silver City than it is in Tucson, and it's 84 at midday. And looking ahead to the weekend, very nice. I think we are looking at maybe close to 107 over the weekend. How about lower 90s, maybe 91, 92 in Silver City? So my 10 degrees cooler has plenty of elbow room there. I mean, we're almost getting into that 20 degrees cooler. So if you're looking for a nice getaway when you're ready to take the three-hour drive over to Silver City in Grant County, they're ready to welcome you with open arms. And go to southwestnewmexico.org and check it out. Let's go back to the web, or not to the website, but to the live line. Hank Amos, CEO and the chairman of the board of Tucson Realty and Trust, Incorporated here in Tucson back in 1911. We've been discussing kind of what is going on with the commercial, some of the real estate business as well, residential real estate. And I also want to point out that Hank was kind enough to take part in our very successful Tucson History podcast programs that we're doing here at KVOI.com. Our ace production guy, Greg Gerringer, really has put together a series of wonderful programs looking back at Tucson history. And Hank, you were featured in that, talking about that time when IBM made that decision, well, we're leaving Tucson.
Right. We talked about that and what the environment was, more specifically the political environment and why IBM left and the conditions therefore. And as we mentioned, or as I mentioned in that podcast, was that, you know, in the early 80s and up into 86, you know, Tucson was recognized, and we've talked about this before, Bill, as one of the top five cities in the country. Top five best place to live, top five best tech city, top five best place to do business, and was really becoming a jewel of the Southwest, right? And we were competing against Austin for these top tier companies. You know, IBM came here, and we actually had other companies like Intel and Motorola that wanted to come here, as well as another huge division of IBM. And what happened was in 87 or in 86, there was a change in leadership in both our board of supervisors and later on in the city council. And we had, you know, back then, if you remember, there was a Not in My Backyard, the NIMBY growth movement.
They were
a minority movement, but they were very, very vocal. We're kind of seeing that today a little bit kind of going on right now, where there's a vocal minority that's really been strong and speaking out. Well, the same thing happened back then. And there was this fear that Tucson was going to be this another Phoenix, and we don't want to, you know, you'd see people wearing badges, you know, with a cross around a saguaro. You know, nobody wants to, you know, tear down saguaros or blade, you know, acres of land a day. And so this new political movement that came in with a new mayor and Molly McCaslin, Tom Volge was the new mayor, Molly McCaslin and others. Then on the board of supervisors, Sharon Bronson and Iris Dewhurst and others came in, and there was more of a protect the environment and no growth. And there were, you know, companies that wanted to come here. There were, you know, conditions being put on, like Motorola, you'd have to unionize if you came here. And the guy from Motorola who was heading the move was actually a graduate from the University of Arizona. And the conditions were just too tough, where Motorola said, we're not coming. And then, you know, Intel wanted to come here, and there was protest and a noise being made that the wafers that they were making in their chips and all would pollute the environment or pollute the desert, and a lot of backlash, and we weren't really accommodating to them, so they didn't come here. And IBM, I think, saw the handwriting on the wall and the change of being a very pro-business environment to really an anti-business environment.
Hank, go ahead.
Yes.
I'm quickly running out of time, and I do want to look ahead now, Hank, to the remaining part of this year. This is one of those years, 2020, that we will be so glad to see in the rearview mirror, and we're very hopeful that by the end of the year there'll be a vaccine. And I really think that's the key before we so-called back to normal or whatever. So how do we play out the rest of the year here?
Well, I think what's going to end up happening is a lot of it's going to, you know, I think from a commercial standpoint and a residential standpoint, people kind of saw what happened and realized that we were getting back to normal again and that we will get there. So I do think that people are still going to go and buy homes and take advantage of those low interest rates. Though, traditionally speaking, that residential market ends about it peaks at March 30th. in that season from the weekend after Super Bowl or right after Super Bowl to January, the first week of June. That's the market, right? And it peaks March 30th. So I think what's going to end up happening is that people realize we will get back to normal. They're making the adjustments. So I see the residential market continue to do well, especially taking advantage of these low interest rates. Now, I don't know what's going to end up happening with folks losing their jobs, and there's definitely going to be people losing their jobs because some of these businesses are not going to make it. But you're going to see people taking advantage of that. From the commercial standpoint, what I'm seeing right now is commercial investors, everybody's kind of realizing that it will get back to normal. And the banks are kind of getting up on that too a little bit. And I think you're going to see business kind of picking up. We're not going to be at the pace that we were in January and February. It's just not going to happen. But I don't think we're going to drop off the cliff. I don't know, like we talked about, what's going to happen with office demand. You know, it can remain the same. I would say that vacancy is going to increase. And as leases expire, you're going to see folks maybe not take as much space. That's what I would think. Retail has kind of been flat anyway for a while. They've been kind of flat. Like last year was one of the first years in a long time they had negative absorption. So, you know, you're still seeing some of these bigger stores close. You know, we talk about Sears and Macy's and Kmart. And I don't know all those mom and pops are going to make it, because their PPP money is going to run out here, and will they continue to do it? Landlords are pretty much working with their major tenants, but like, you know, if you're a nail salon, I mean, they get it. You're either going to survive or not, and I don't think they're really beating those guys up for rent right now, and they're not worrying about a workout. If they get back to business, they can get back to business. But if you're more of a regional or national tenant, there's workouts being made, but I don't know, again, how that retail market, nobody really knows how this is going to play out, and we won't know what happens later on. Industrial, again, we've already seen vacancy increase from 6.8% to 7.4%, right? Rent growth has been pretty much flat. Where we're seeing there, though, is Tucson's really promoting the fact that we are a distribution logistic transportation hub, that because of the rail that we have and the airport that we have and the freeways that we have, we can do that. So you're going to continue to see companies like Home Goods and FedEx and Amazon relocate here. Okay. And all. And then finally,
real quickly, your final thought. I've only got a few seconds.
I've never seen anything like it. And I think we're going to survive. I just don't know what it's going to be like, but we'll have a better idea at the end of the year how the economy is going to play out and what's going to happen. Are we going to, you know, have this U shape or V shape, or could we go into a recession? I don't think really we know exactly what's going to happen.
Hank Amos, thank you very much. Happy 4th of July, Hank. Stay safe.
You too. Take care. Thanks you for having me.
All right. Hank Amos, Tucson Realty and Trust, CEO. Always interesting for his assessment. That's the Buckmaster Show. Thanks, Tom Fairbanks, for another great job spinning the dials. Have a great afternoon, everybody.